Hi, I'm Josh, and my favorite part of iMadman was the piano player who has sometimes his music just kind of slowly becomes non-diegetic as he goes, it goes on to the soundtrack, and it's just a kind of lovely thing. And I will say that his playing is not as good once he is killed and his ears removed, but as long as he's upright, he's grand.
Oh, goodness.
Okay. hey. I'm Matt, and if you enjoy the movie Necropolis, you might be surprised to find that there are places actually referred to as Necropolises, and you could go to them and listen to the band The Necromantics and have the most romantic time ever in a catacomb of some sort and use all these words to impress the goth girl at Hot Topic that won't go on the date with you.
La 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 la.
The more you
know. I was trying to do Daria, but I just couldn't.
Oh, Daria. God damn.
Well, you said Hot Love Topic. It. I just like popped this. Like,
you're right. Yeah, I know. And I realize that there's got to be something that's not Hot Topic that would be the proper pop culture reference now because I'm old, but I have no idea what that is because I'm old. And it would be creepier if I did know.
Yeah. Go ahead, John.
You know the sign sometimes you see where it says, welcome to our ool. You notice there's no P in it, those ones. I was trying to think of like our fluencers, and there's no N in it. And I was like, but that N is the N. And then it's like, well, that is a, well, shit. Like, rework the math.
Mm-hmm.
Carry the two.
And there is no I in team, and nor is there in horror show Hata. So first up, we have a short called Irradiated, which if you're Spanish, you might say that it's, I don't know, irradiated.
Orangutan?
Orangutan. Irradiada.
There you go.
If you're a guy, if you're a lady, if you're a dude, you have to be irradiado.
Ah.
But either way, you get the rrr. So that's good. what's not in Spanish is this short because it's in Russian.
Yeah,
and it is.
And took boy, me a is while. It Russian.
It took right. me a while to figure, but it is animated, just in that like Love, Death, and Robots kind of way, right? Like,
yeah.
I confess that even after he took off his helmet, I wasn't sure until they said like motion capture credits are go to Bob Motion and Bill Capture.
That's some click and clack level humor.
Yeah, it's Hanna-Barbera and motion capture.
It's like what's the
and motion capture
founded by Steve Waffle House. It's just a fucking love stupid shit like that. But so like Matt, what I wanted to ask you, like, what is so just right off the bat, like, because I had a couple of quick thoughts on this, but I was just like, so where did this come from besides Russia? Like that, that's the obvious answer, but.
Like, as in, like, the provenance of the short film?
How did it come to your attention?
I don't know. Okay. This, I think, might have been just something I randomly stumbled upon. Because I will, if I don't have anything that I'm interested in watching, sometimes just, like, look up horror short something and then just follow the recommendation rabbit holes and just try to pick the weirdest ones.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one that I believe I just found that way. And there's just something about it that's a little off and weird, and it kind of stuck with me. And I've gone back and kind of watched it again a couple times and been like, I still can't tell what the deal is with it, what makes me kind of fascinated by it. But it has something about it. And I figured, okay, I'll try to exercise this by putting it in front of you two and see if it has any kind of like vibe or anything with you guys, or if it's just, nah, this is kind of interesting or dumb or whatever, and meh. But yeah.
I think having it have the cosmic horror tag put mm-hmm. me in the right mindset for like, okay, this is going to be slow with something hard to explain at the end of it, right? So going through, we're mostly just watching this guy walk through kind of a hell blasted landscape with a couple of space marines on either side. And eventually, like, he has a couple of mild like reality slips and a little bit of lost time. And then they get to this thing that just looks like a model of magnetic energy, maybe a model of an atom that just made out of concrete rubble that's just constantly moving and circling in on itself. And then he's forced into the thing where he then sees from the outside of the thing that it's eating all of the people around him instead of him, and then he gets spit back out into a bright, beautiful day. I don't know. I liked it too. I liked just instead of a weird, freaky looking creature, it tried to portray this whatever, you know, interdimensional portal or being or whatever as this just constantly shifting heap of rubble. Kind of reminded me of the stuff that Neil Blomkamp Studio puts out, the Oaks mm-hmm. stuff.
Yeah.
In that way where he's just trying to convey the sense of something that feels impossible. And for some reason, just that sound of the click, 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 click as it changed its form was enough to make it seem really eerie for me. And then I liked that it's just like they thought that they were shoving him in there to check it out. And really, once he was in there, he could just see what the creature was doing on the outside, which was chewing through all the other guys. At least that's what I thought, but I also think it could be something else and it doesn't matter overly much. Yeah.
What do you think, Charlie?
Yeah, I mean, this is the type of thing where it's always that, like, that flavor that you're, if you're in the mood for, because, like, mm-hmm. I would say like kind of like one of those, like, kind of light on substance, but, like, a lot of style to it, because it looks really remarkable. Like, it's really remarkable to look at. It's interesting and creative and different, and there's just, you know, there's a lot of kind of cool creative stuff going on, but I just kind of, at a certain point, it's like I was falling somewhere between the proof of concept and then being like, did I somehow start it like 30 seconds into it or a minute into it or something? Like, was there something that tells me something about something? And it's sort of like, so I was like, well, I guess there's not. And so I just kind of like, well, just kind of go along with it. And yeah, it's got a lot of atmosphere and it's got a lot of interesting like look to it or else. I just could have used a little bit more, taco filling, you know. It's like that being said, like, I mean, it's very clear that there was some very serious work and effort putting into what they were getting across visually and stuff, and I really applaud them for that, because, like, you know, sometimes we've seen this with especially Eastern European things where they'll be like really enamored with doing the computer thing, and it's just under any amount of resolution you're like, man, it looks kind of dumb. And so I never visually caught myself that way, which is, I don't think that's a small feat, because like oftentimes they don't really fly real well, and you get kind of separated from the material. And so they really did that quite well, and it was sort of like, and maybe there was some mystery into what was going on. I just would have wanted just a little bit more of like a little more context.
Yeah, and I think that's where I was kind of conflicted on whether or not I wanted to even do it, because I couldn't tell if it's. Because sometimes I'm trapped in the paradox of, is this dumb or am I not smart enough? Like, you know, because they can look similar or perhaps even the same. And so this is one of those where I'm like, I think I really like this. And I think I don't necessarily get all of it. And I kind of think that's okay. I think like this is one of the ones I sort of describe as like a tone poem. Where it's like, you know, if you're going to listen to like weirder music like Can or like that Brian Eno, David Byrne record, like you can't be asking it to give you something it was never trying to in the first place. And like, I feel like I'm a little itchy because I want a little more resolution, but I also think that they definitely want to have given me the reaction it did, which is to make me keep thinking about it and trying to like suss it out myself. So like, I guess that's better. If that's what it is, and it's not just that it didn't have a lot of resolution and I'm just driving myself crazy, that's also a possibility. So I don't know.
that weird feeling of something making emotional sense.
Yeah.
And it's in the most pretentious way, I'm sure, that I can describe it. Like, I like story, and I think the telling of a story is important, and that's why I get mad at a movie that has somebody be dead the whole time, or a secret twin, or, you know, whatever it was going on at the end of Identity where everyone's in the same head. You know, like, story is important. But at the same time, if something makes emotional sense to where I can go, yeah, like on a story level, he goes into this dark place and he faces his fear and comes out the other side. Like, yeah, that makes sense. And it's like, yeah, but what actually happened? Like, what was the sequence of events as you would describe it? And I'm like, well, I don't rightly know, but it made sense.
I suppose that's kind of like we were talking about with folklore in like Ireland or Scandinavia, where it's like, yeah, they don't necessarily think it's all real and true, but also you still don't fuck around with X, Y, and Z. like if you try to like, yeah, like set it in stone, it falls apart. But as a vibe thing, it just kind of works, maybe.
Well, yeah, when she says, like, when Little Red Riding Hood's grandma says, just take off your skin and turn it inside out, and then you'll be a wolf, and you can put your skin back on, and she does. And we just go, it would be ridiculous to say that's not possible. Or is this a metaphor, or is she physically meant to be removing her skin in the context of this story? We just go, yeah, that makes sense. That right. makes an emotional sense in a way that just like watching a documentary of someone doing that thing would not.
Hmm. Yeah. So
although if you ever make a documentary where you turn your skin inside out and become a werewolf, people let me know, especially if it's dick first. I'm into that.
Not enough dick first transformations. I've always said that.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Come on down to dick first transformations.
And for those of you not in the know, and if you are in the know, then what the hell's wrong with you? But if you're not in the know, we were talking about just a remarkable feat of creative engineering and Wolf Cop. And and if you go back and find that episode, we have a great old time talking about that.
Yeah, Wolf Cop rules.
It's just so much fun and just so bonkers in every way. It's just like, that's great stuff.
I'm just picturing the cable access channel where the guy Richard First, maybe with a U instead of an I, said, come on down to Dick First Transformations. We'll transform your home. Remodel your kitchen and fuck.
It's one of those things where they like go, don't even remove the old tub. We'll just put the new thing over it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there you go. Dick it first does, transformations. We start at the toilet and work our
problem
way to the
of it is The problem with that, though, Matt, is it does remove some of the sensitivity of the tub. But I mean, it's just kind of like, it's a little easier to clean, I guess. But I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah, we all know if there's one part that's tough to get boys to touch,
the bathtub.
Oh God! Well, there we are.
Working better. Bathtub comments, ladies and gentlemen. Ask your doctor. If you take a bath that lasts longer than 4 hours, see a doctor. Yeah. Dick joke transformation.
Yep. Yeah.
So yeah, this little guy. I'm a simple man. It's 10 minutes is a little bit too long. But it was still, I was still in it in that like Love, Death, and Robots kind of way. I just like looking at all the cool uniforms in this. There are at least three different varieties, and they're all
that's neat.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because that's kind of cool, right? Like that kind of does.
Yeah, this place it looks nice.
It just speaks to somebody paying close attention to what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, like and they I really didn't just that.
Palette swap one guy and clone him three times. There's.
Yeah, it's.
Or yeah, it's not a AAA video game. God.
Well, I just like, and that's, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, Joshua, because that is something that, like, that just shows somebody that sat down and thought about what they were doing. It just sort of doesn't just sort of code as, like, generalized, you know, Pentium dancer guy outfit. It's like this different stuff that, you know, and I think it's cool. Yeah, there's something neat about that. Same thing, I always have that feeling when somebody's invented some kind of device that somebody's using in a thing, like some kind of science fiction or that kind of thing. There's some doohickey of some kind or other, and I always love that. I was like, I've always, for probably the entire life, I've always really appreciated when there's like a doohickey of some kind.
Yeah, and if you can have a blinking light or two, hell yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, I mean, that's my fucking, I mean, maybe you just blame Ghostbusters, but like, first time he pulls out the EKG meter and the little thing goes whoop up to the side, and you're just like, oh, that's the best.
Yeah, you instantly want one. Yeah.
It's just like, or like, I mean, going back into like, you know, older indie comics, like the Eastman and Laird and Ninja Turtles, first time you see one of those little mouser robot things drawn, you see herds of them, it's like you can feel what they like. Oh, that would be cold and like clanky, and it's like, it's so, I don't know, there's something when you have a doohickey of some kind, there's something really neat about that. And so like, and so yeah, just like with the uniforms and this, like Josh says, like there's something kind of cool about just the that creative juice. And so I really applaud them for that, for sure.
I wish that I could see it with more pixels.
Yeah, I had the same thought.
The dark bits get a little pixel poor. And I think I'm just spoiled from the files that we were getting for the film.
Yeah, festival. Right. Getting theater quality stuff like has been
a shit. Yeah. Like, so I can't really fault it for that. I think that people should watch this. I think it's pretty.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's pretty chill. It's not like, you know, if you get a little tired of it and you want to tune out, like, great. It's not going to ruin your day.
Well, and it definitely fits into that kind of, if you have an interest in like the sci-fi horror kind of blendy regions, you know, and you want to hear and see something that is maybe not the same exact kind of kettle of fish that people are drawing from. They're like, this is definitely a different thing, which I really appreciate. So, yeah. So, I mean, it's just an interesting animal, interesting little animal.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Aren't we all? let's start with influencers, shall we?
Yeah, sure. I think so.
Or
yeah.
Las influyentes.
So just because I know we always say like, okay, if there's gonna be spoilers, whatever else. So right off the bat, I want to say that I really like this a lot. I really enjoyed this, but I will also say that there's another version of this movie that I would have wanted more, which is that at the end of this movie, one of the characters is running around with like a little hacky bladey knifey thing, chasing a bunch of people, and just full-born wackahoo chasing people, but and the credits are rolling. What I would have liked the movie that we were given be the first half. And then at the halfway point, that character does the thing, chasing after people, attacking people. And like the whole second half is like a jet-setting international woman of mystery slasher movie.
Mm.
And it's like, I would have loved that.
You just have to be more patient because I'm sure part three will absolutely.
That's, I mean, if they have any sense in the world, like,
because I'm here for that movie too.
Yeah, I just like I love this idea of like taking a slasher, but then just sort of like bringing in the elements of what have made these movies interesting, and what has made this character interesting, but then just bring in that like kind of like James Bond sort of jet setting spy kind of vibe, but like have it be slasher thing. Like that's fun. That's a fun thing. So, but that being said, like, it's just the movie as we're given. I did like quite a bit. I just sort of like I lament the idea that part is not the halfway point.
The only thing that I would have messed with a little bit is having CW kill someone before she needs to. Dilutes her a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love the idea of she is just completely done with the murders and happy with this girl and hasn't just killed someone and had the girl find out. Like, she was already like on the slide when we catch up with her, like, just kind of waiting for somebody to kill. It's like, oh, but be innocent until, like, the past comes back to haunt you and maybe you're still living the not killing people life when the victim from the previous movie catches up to you. So you're like, I'm not even that person anymore. I'm happy. I'm settled. And oh shit, now it's kill or be killed, right?
Yeah. Because I initially recoiled at this I think that is probably why I hadn't quite figured out exactly what it was. But I think that's it, is that like, tonally at the beginning it just felt messy to me because she doesn't feel consistent with like what I felt we had in the previous one, which is this highly capable, very much like very no nonsense, like this is a means to an end and she's good at it, right? Like it's practice, she has a routine. And her getting emotional and offing someone for like getting miffed about a hotel room or whatever just seems so petty. Like, then I feel like she would have been more reckless in the last movie. And again, this could be, by movie three, she might put on a hockey mask and we'll fully see the transformation of this character. But like that felt a little weird. And then once it goes bonkers, then you kind of go, okay. But I think, a more reliable breaking point for that might have made it a little smoother getting to that point, at least for me.
Well, the only thing I kept thinking with that character getting kind of whacked was I did like the idea that like, you know, the like her extreme level behavior is killing people. Most people's extreme level behavior would be like intentionally spilling a drink on someone. Yeah. And it's sort of like she's kind of at a point where she's just like, I'd like, you know, kind of like, I'll talk to your manager kind of level of frustration. And it's like for her, it's like, no, her 11 is a lot higher. Yeah. And so it's sort of like, it's a little more severe. And so it's like, but yeah, it is a little bit jarring. But this one does some things that I really appreciate in terms of the thriller components. Cause there's some beats you come to expect where you have your character who is going to make it seem as though she's doing something bad, or like she's going to get framed for a thing, or make it look as though she's doing something bad or whatever. And then you're going to have a switcheroo, or you have to, you know, those kind of beats that are always in there. And this one does a pretty darn good job, I would say, of playing that up, but not being that being the only thing, because like that kind of gets to be a little bit like kind of third act of murder she wrote, and then kind of like, it's like, and it's fine, but it's sort of, it's a little bit, you know, it's been well done before. Whereas this one kind of gets into the thing of being like, you know, it's not just for like, it's not really just for financial gain. Like she has no problem dispatching someone, or just absolutely just completely ruining somebody's everything. It doesn't matter. Like none of it really registers. And so like, it's a little more extreme. And so, you know, they've recognized, it seems like the writer director recognized that like the stakes can't just be like, I am clever, I am Moriarty. Like it's not that. It's gotta be like, it's sort of like, you know, it's the by any means necessary, like in all situations, which is great because then she fucks up some things from time to time. She makes errors, and it's like, oh, that was awesome. That was one of the things I want to give this movie a lot of credit for, is that they didn't make her just like the perfect combination of Danny Ocean and Dexter. Like it was sort of like, you know, she still makes errors, and
well, and it makes sense in this one for her to not be as perfect as she was initially in the last one, because this is one where she didn't choose when to begin the con and when to end the con and when to like pull the trigger. This got thrust upon her, so like her being on tilt makes perfect sense, I think, yeah, in this one. And I think again, like it all pays off somehow. Like I don't know, like I feel like this is, I don't know,
like
if you
the
guys
plan
have
that
at,
she is trying to run completely falls apart, and yeah, she's just on her back foot half of the movie, which is fun.
And like, did you guys look at reviews at all? Like, is this? I feel like this would be divisive for people. Like, I think, did we all end up liking it? I think we did, right?
Yeah,
I mean, yeah,
it's got a two. I just saw a 2-star review on one of my Letterboxd followers. So,
oof, yeah, because I could see people being upset that it goes kind of goofy.
But like, I could almost give it being a little bit sci-fi in its some of the things that it does, like having the her AI voice companion. But that is real close. Like that's ChatGPT and a text-to-speech translator, and like having a persistent character like that would be tricky, but not like that's not a it's not a transporter. Or a matter replicator like that. That's pretty close.
Well, and they do. They also, that's
the little thing, you know, I'll give it to them.
Well, and you also, you just queued up the other thing I was going to say too, which was that I thought it was so interesting and ballsy for the filmmakers to like almost in a couple of those moments, introducing a couple of those concepts, almost make her sympathetic. Cause like, you know, once the girl is like there, it's a tale of the movie, but you know, when she's there and she's talking to the French chick who's like now in the computer, and initially you're like, oh God, this is, blah. And then it starts just talking to her like she's the other girl, because it doesn't know, and it's not, you know, it's just, we're not 500 years in the future or whatever else, so it's like it doesn't know, and it's like, and they give this little twinge, like little, at least I did, little tiny twinge of being like, oh man. I kind of feel, and yeah. I was like, hey, screw you. I'm not supposed to feel that way for this character. Well, she's terrible.
Right. But that's the thing though, right? Is like a fully fleshed out. Died. Yeah. Like a fully fleshed out character is like, yeah, you can be someone that's willing to kill people, but when someone you care about dies, you could still feel bad. And it's like, okay, movie, you walked a weird tightrope. But I think for me as well, it worked where you're like, oh, that made me feel like had she not had things go sideways, yeah, she would have put that part of her life behind her and just been happy. Like, it made me believe in the previous relationship more, because at first I was wondering if that was just part of the next con, but I don't think it was. It seemed like that was just legit. So, like, there is some tragedy in that. You know, it's the you know, the attempted, you know, return from, you know, a shady past or whatever. Like, you know, it's a hero's journey that she failed. And like, that's, yeah, that's traditionally sympathetic. Then of course she goes on a nice rampage.
Having her commit that murder, even showing us later that it was just like her pure survival instinct kicking in.
Right.
And but then you go, yes, but it does take a while to strangle somebody.
Right.
It's not like you did the no look stabbing club, the Polonius club for looking before you stab kind of thing.
Right.
It's more of a violent, gross crime. But seeing that reaction, you go, oh, yeah, that right. does suck for her. And then that poor kid, her lover died. And wait, do you kill?
Wait, hold yeah. the damn minutes. Yeah.
Hang on.
That's what I mean. Like, it's like,
what's but she's so goddamn charismatic, too. That
yeah, she's great in this again. Yeah.
Well, and it's so interesting, too, because our other one, the lead from the first movie, who was kind of in hot pursuit in this one or else, is so interesting because I think they could have gotten so bogged down with the whole, like, oh, well, the charges were dropped, but she's a this, that, whatever. Like, it's part of it, but it's not. That I think they correctly recognize that it's not that interesting.
Oh, a legal mm-hmm. drama would have made this really bad.
Because, yeah, it just sort of been like, like, yeah, some, like, rogue detective or whatever else was, like, on our yeah. trail and whatever. Like, it's just how dull.
That's like a sci-fi original version.
Yeah, it's yeah. very one-note and boring.
Or a Hellraiser sequel.
they let it occur because it is part of the thing, but it's sort of like, I like that they just didn't, that this wasn't the biggest part of it. And this is like, okay, good. That's a very good decision. And then you come to the other big choices that, like, yeah, I think it was texting with us, like this one has had a lot of big choices. And, like, the kind of alpha dude online bro supplement thing, that whole that character, and that whole part of things, it was, I found it interesting because it was like, you introduced him in this whole little stupid underworld of, you know, these basement dwelling toad monkey types that are just sort of like, so you bring that, okay, that feels like, okay, this is a tab A slot B thing. And then you bring in this whole, like, other aspect of that guy's life. And they're like, he doesn't try to sleep with the girl, but she's like, oh, I'll just Black Widow this motherfucker. And he's like, no, I can't do that because I don't cheat on. Then it's like, huh. All right. And then you bring in the whole thing with his wife or girlfriend or whoever, and that whole thing, and you're sort of like, I feel like you're trying, like Josh's voice in my head, like, I feel like you're trying to communicate. I know it. So I couldn't make heads or tails about those decisions. Like, I just, they're big decisions. They weren't subtle, but it was like, I don't know what to make of them necessarily.
I think there's just a continuing unmasking of what these things are like in real life in this context that is completely unreal, right? But in the first one, it was like, this looks like a glamorous life for this person and that she's super happy, except that it's actually pretty shitty and she's miserable.
Right.
And then in this one, we have like, this is He-Man woman-hating guy, but he is completely submissive to his girlfriend.
Yeah.
And gets off on it even. And then you've got the, you know, the other travel influencer. And then she's...
Oh, the Riley from Letterkenny?
And then and his wife is, or his girlfriend too, is she's like the lifestyle blogger with a Christian, like right-wing bent to it.
Yeah.
Thing. And then she's got her whole secret life that has nothing to do with her persona on camera. I thought it was funny, the like shooting the one reel and then she just takes her shirt off in front of the cameraman who she's later fucking, right?
Right.
Which is just a change, but, you know, there's no like prudence and modesty happening behind the scenes. So that all tied together for me pretty well. Even having the asshole podcasters on there, which I don't think you need it, but it at least fits their theme again of like, this is what being so chronically online does to you. So like, I accepted it. I still think those scenes could have gone. Like, I'm getting really tired of podcast interviews that they pretend are running on live TV. Right.
Yeah. That's a great observation, Josh.
To make it seem like it. But at the same time, like the main thing is she could just leave. Mm-hmm. She's just sitting in a room with these dipshits. She could just leave, but they're kind of treating it like it's a live broadcast and she would be disappointing fans or whatever, like that there was such a social expectation on her. I was like, no, you can't pretend it's a radio interview or a television interview. It is a pre-recorded medium.
Yeah. Though there's a long history of film and television not understanding the internet. The special bonus content, if you're a Max Fun member from the Jordan Jesse Go podcast, is a podcast movie podcast where they record episodes about the use of podcasting in other media. And almost always they treat it recording a podcast and like as though it's a live recording. And people are freaking out that's, you know, the kid walked in the room. Whoa. And it's like the sitcom shit. And it's like, you would just hit pause and do an edit.
Yeah.
Or they'll have people just talking in like a full office full of people, open floor plan. No microphones visible. And they're like, we got it. Like, cool. So yeah, this might just be the people being, you know, 60-year-old white dudes in a room writing. Yeah. So they're in the middle of a broadcast, so she can't leave. And it's like, that's not what that is. But, mm-hmm. You know, no one's going to listen to that.
They're just like, nobody listens to our podcast. That's how it is.
Yeah. Who wants to hear what we say?
What else can I say about this one? It's pretty. It is really pretty.
It's shot really, really well.
Well, having your premise be that you're like using your ability to find influencers who are required to be in the most luxurious places ever means you have the best eye candy for your cinematographer at all times. Like,
yeah, it's like, honey, where, it's brilliant. Where are they? Where are they in the beginning? And she's like, it's some like little town in France. Like, can we be there?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I could go to Bali or Thailand too, but that little town in France is really goddamn adorable.
Any one of them looks cool. I bet the food's good.
Well, the other thing that I found interesting too was that, like, I liked how, and I think they could have done this more, but they highlight the idea that like you have all these like people, and I think there's a large spectrum of, and I'm going to use this word loosely here, but a large spectrum of quality when it comes to people that are like permanently kind of digital nomad traveler type people who do that type of work. There's several of them that I follow on YouTube and whatever else that I think are genuinely good at what they do. Like they are really like intensely detail oriented and they're like really focused on like when people are trying to like move out of the country, for example, or looking at different things. And they really put out just a fuck ton of work into that part of it. I really admire them. I think it's really kind of cool. Then there are other ones that I'm just sort of, it's a very vapid and silly and like kind of very surfacey level. And so in the movie, they kind of highlight that there's this kind of level of kind of silly image, first image only type of stuff. And it's kind of like, and what I thought was interesting about like, you know, kind of Bali or Southeast Asia or whatever else is, and it kind of spoke to me a little bit just because of some of these people that I have followed or followed some of their work, is that I know that a lot of areas of Southeast Asia, like you can just kind of live there and live pretty damn well for a whole fuck ton less than it costs to live pretty much anywhere else. And it's like, and it doesn't look right. You're like, there's like these multi-bedroom kind of villas and these kind of places, whatever else, and they're paying what you'd be paying for just an armpit of Satan's asshole apartment in any major metropolitan area in the United States. And so it's like, it looks off because you're like, that doesn't equate to a thing that a person can afford. But it does lean into, if you're going to do it, if you're doing it for all style, no substance, you can really pass off like you're just, you know, to pardon the phrase from the late Dr. Martin Luther King, you're killing the game. And it's sort of like, and so you can pass it off. So I like that they lean into that a little bit. They kind of play that up. Not as much as I think they could have, but they do play that up to a degree, which I thought was kind of a cool thing. The only other thing that I wanted to make sure I didn't forget to mention was French girlfriend lady and French girlfriend lady's mom and that whole part of it. Did either one of you kind of feel like there's maybe some plot components that were like removed from the escalation of those relationships and the turn of you did the bad stuff like part of that? Because I felt like some of that was like felt very rushed to me a little bit.
I think there's probably something to that, because that's maybe that's part of, again, that sort of like disjointedness I felt before I settled into like what was clearly like the new tone, capital N, capital T. But I don't have like a specific complaint I could point at.
Yeah, I did find it like but curiously touching that they were having these video calls, and horrifying that it was with like basically a digital overlay of that daughter's face. But you know, it seemed like they were really connecting, so yeah, it's got to be all right. It's always interesting when to have a gay couple and the parents just be fine with it and not even mention it, and like I enjoy that.
Yeah, that's cool too.
That should happen more often. Yeah. It's that Schitt's Creek thing where Dan Levy was just like, we decided we would just have a world without homophobia because we get to make whatever world we want. It's like, that's great.
Well, that's kind of the thing of like, you know, we, you know, kind of like hope for the next generation kind of a thing where, you know, like because of our lead lady has the birthmark on her face, you know, it's very prominent and it's very, you know, you notice it. But the, what I like is that at no point in this do we waste any amount of film time with somebody, you know, doing a bunch of gawking or a bunch of fussing or a bunch of whatever. It's just like, that's what her face looks like. And that's sort of, that's, you know, on down the road. It doesn't really matter. And it makes me think of my darling daughter who saw somebody with a prosthetic leg about a week or so ago, and she noticed it, and you know, and this and whatever else, and we were a little later on, and we were back in the car or whatever it was, and so and I said, did you notice the man that had the metal leg? Remember we watched the thing about how they make those? Because Joe really likes to watch making of videos on YouTube. She likes to learn.
Like, me too.
Bowling balls and jelly beans and trees, and like we don't make trees, sweetheart. They grow like, oh okay, benches. Okay. But we watched a thing about prosthetic limbs and how they make them. I said, oh, did you see the man that had the metal leg or whatever else? And it was that interesting. What did you think? Or whatever else. And she goes, it's really great. He gets to have a leg. And that was it. Like, not like, go. Oh my God, it's scary. Oh my God, it's freaky. Oh, it's a laugh at it. It's just like, well, isn't that great? All right, on to the next thing. It's like that level of just like automatic, like, yep, we're good at five. I was like, yeah, let's hope for the generation, hope for the future yet.
Maybe they will grow up to murder some dudes in Bali.
Yeah.
Get them.
I do like how the plot very quickly slides out of control of both of the antagonist and protagonist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just there are wrinkles they were not expecting.
I'm
going to go through Manosphere's computer and find out that he has a cuckold fetish. And he just have straight up porn of him watching his wife getting cocked, and like that's fascinating. And then suddenly there's a body that they didn't even cause, and just I like the way this unravels and unravels and unravels, and I was never really sure what was going to happen.
So, yeah, for sure,
very fun that way.
Yeah, that's a very good way to summarize that part of it. Like the biggest strength of this is that, without being gimmicky, you don't 100% know how it's going to play out exactly. Mm-hmm. Like the first one, the way it ends, you're kind of like, well, that was kind of wild. Like this one is more just sort of like, I truly don't know how this is all going to end up for all of our people.
But I do like how it ends with just her running down the street, swinging a machete, just having completely lost everything.
And really looking like she's maybe having a better time now.
Yeah, it's like, finally I can just be free. I can
drop the act in every way, shape, and form and just, yeah, going toward the light.
Well, it's like, you know, that scene where dude bro guy is like chasing after her when she's going to her scooter, and he's just like, because he has no couth or tact, he just is like, wait, did you like murder a bunch of people? Like, what is this somewhere else? Did you? So it's like, he's just like just blurting out all this like just direct stuff at her, and like watching her face, like, huh? What? It's like, you know, it's like if you've ever seen those things where, like, you know how like even big cats just behave like house cats, and if you ever seen like a trainer like whoop a panther's nose, they behave the same way a house cat does. Like, huh? What happened to my nose just now? That was crazy. And it's like she had that look of like a boop panther. Like, whoa. And it's just like, and it was so interesting to put that little bit in there because he's so loathsome and obnoxious. But it's sort of like, it's like this is not somebody who's just going to be who's immediately like, oh, she's murdered a bunch of people. Like, oh, cool. I'm just going to like ask her some stuff, like TMZ style. And it's like, that's fascinating to have to drop that like air of fear or that air of like caution. And it's like, and she didn't know what to do with it. She's like, well, I'm the one in control. Like, no, not necessarily. And it's just sort of like, and that's super cool. That's super interesting. So yeah, they made like this was a film of a lot of big choices.
Yeah,
and that if you agree with them or not, or you enjoy them or not, like I really kind of I dig the idea that they, you know, they really were going after some like not subtle small sort of ideas. So
it feels like there aren't that many ways to make a sequel to a slasher, which is kind of what Influencer was, right?
Yeah.
And they managed to find a new story to tell with these guys that is kind of continuing the first bit, but then taking it to a different direction. And like, they didn't give her dream powers or not have yet. Her die and get shocked back awake or anything. She's still the same character, but just doing a kind of different story that lets them talk about online stuff in a different way. Because now, a lot of the time when you think of an influencer, you would think more of like the Joe Rogan type or the Charlie Kirk type than like the most obnoxious thing an influencer can be has changed. And the two people who are like central influencers are actively putting harm in the world. So man, that, yeah, it hits different. It's interesting.
Yeah.
What else?
Mm-hmm. That's all the main stuff I could think of. I just, you know, it's sort of like you said, I keep going back to the thing of like the my biggest takeaway from this was just like some big choices. I really enjoy when something feels like somebody's really kind of making those statements. Like, you know, I mean, we could talk about the subject for a long time. Like, you know, one of the best is, you know, look back on, even to now, even with all the accolades and everything else, look back on Guillermo del Toro's movies, like, you know, watch like Kronos, or Pan's Labyrinth, or like, they're not, it's not subtle. Like, there are big choices that are made, and it's like, and that's really neat, and it's something that's really kind of awesome that I really like a lot, and I like to see when somebody is getting very bold in what they're trying to do. And so, like, I think this could have played a little bit more like like kind of movie of the week sort of suspense thriller thing, or like kind of like sexual switcheroo. Like, this could have been like made in the late 80s, early 90s with like Kathleen Turner. Like, because I'm thinking of, yeah, like, Body Heat, you know, or whatever. Is it Body Heat? That's what I'm thinking of.
I think
with Bill Hurt. And this could have gone that way. It could have been that. But instead, it's like they are bringing in these things that are just different ways and perspectives on doing stuff, and then just making a villain actually fallible beyond just sort of a hero accidentally besting them at the end, and it's sort of like making her have missteps and mistakes, and that takes a whole level of thinking that's sort of involved and interesting. And so I don't know, it's just one of those things that, like, you know, I don't know that, you know, everything about it worked 100% well, but I just, you know, I was really kept engaged by just this level of interesting thinking and interesting creative ideas that bring it through. And then not for nothing to say of our actors in this are quite good.
I do think the performances here work for it really well.
I kept thinking, you know, the guy with the long hair, the kind of bro-y Southern California guy.
Meathead man, yeah.
Yeah, that guy. I kept that dude. He kept saying like these sexist and bullshitty things and this garbage. And I kept thinking of this thing that Matt said a long time ago about, I think it may have been about, like, we were talking about Piranha or something. And Matt, you're saying, like, you know, like before the camera rolls, we're like, you know, like, you know, this, that, whatever. And, you know, sometimes, you know, better roles for women and producing roles for whatever else and this, that, whatever else. And we're doing this thing and working on this thing, this, whatever else. Okay, action. Titties! Watching, yeah, that, because he's so that kind of just like, you know, it's just that character, that Fred Armisen character from SNL where he's like reading the newspaper but doesn't actually says anything, where he's just like, he just says, you know what, I'm, it's like that thing like, oh, I was talking to this friend of mine last Tuesday. We agreed that, but you know that when they don't, if you don't have a certain kind of milk, like he just said, he talks like that for like 5 minutes. He never says anything. So it's like you took like that and combined it with this like the broiest, just testosterone Splenda level of just fakery. And it's sort of like, I love the idea of the camera clips. And he's just like, it's like, oh, well, did you get the head in the sweater that I gave it to your grandmother? And it's sort of like, he's like this wonderful proper gentleman, but it's on screen. He's got that little harem of twits that are following him around. And it's just like, ugh. Like you can just like smell the copper tone. You're just like, oh my god, like, yucky. And so it's like, and so that's why when I watch something like this, I think there's a level of self awareness, and there's a level of creativity, and just because of these big old choices, I just sort of go like, okay, they are taking it seriously enough to think these things through.
Yeah,
and for that, I really appreciate it a lot what they are going. I tend to like the crunchier, folkier, more rural-y things that I don't necessarily dial in super well with super slickness, but so far I really like these. I thought they were very cool.
I think it says a lot that this is 110 minutes and I didn't get mad about it.
Yeah, I had the same thought, Joshua. I saw that runtime. I'm like, oh. Then I got to the end of it, like, well, that was fine.
Yeah, this flew by.
At the end, like I was saying, the only thing that I would have cut for runtime was the podcaster scene entirely, but I like that helps just nail down those themes of just how much being online is stupid and social media was a mistake, and
yeah, except for podcasts,
that's where we're at. Yeah, well, we are the opposite of social media. We're an antisocial.
That's true.
The rest of y'all, though,
we're more of a medium
antisocial.
Yeah, we're an antisocial medium rare. So
we don't. But a New York,
not everybody's taste, but
yeah, it's a LA 5 and a Minnesota 8.
Yeah, Reds and 12.
Yeah, 6-7. Okay. God.
Oh no,
Fred is. So my daughter has amazing comedic timing, it turns out, which just makes me so happy. But
well, that should not be surprising to anyone.
Like, she hates the whole 6-7 thing as much as I do. Mm-hmm. So finding ways to sneak it in to a conversation for her is very, very fun. So she does it like in the same way that you would ice your bros, you know, like do Smirnoff ice. If she can sneak a 6-7 and a 7, she absolutely will.
Brilliant. Like,
what time are we supposed to leave? Is it 6 or 7? 6-7. Like, walked right into it. I can still taste it.
Nice.
Damn it. Anyway, this guy is it's a hoot. It's a blast. It's fun. Maybe not as sharp as it could be, but sharper than it has any right to be. And just Cassandra Nod is excellent, and I would watch her eat a bowl of cereal. So I'd say for me, it's like 8.5. Out of 10, I guess if you're just going to cut your own throat, then the rest of us will just stab each other over here.
Right.
Out of 10.
Don't you know there are children going unstabbed in Africa?
I stabbed the kids down in Africa.
Do they know it's Stabmas after all? this movie is great. I feel like I'm low energy tonight. I'm sorry. It's holidays and retail. This movie is a blast. Like I said, I was a little confused early on because the tone just wasn't what I was expecting. But I do think they, as Charlie has mentioned, like they made big decisions and took big swings. And so like this is a little shaggy, but it is, I think,
but it's
you can still see the shape of like the amazing movie in there, and it's a ton of fun. Yeah, so like, you know, I'll also say like 8 out of 10 8 out of 10 influenced. I tried to make that into like a verbing a noun joke, and I don't think influencers is a good word for that. I failed you. Fluence the Inzers. I don't know. Nah, fuck. It doesn't work.
That makes me think of when you said it that way. That reminds me of the Because I can never, whenever I'm spending any money of any amount, like beyond just like a cursory small amount of, for anything, I will just research the living shit out of whatever it is that I'm doing way more than any normal person should. And it's just ridiculous. Like Kristen is one of those ones that's like a red car or blue car? Blue car. Like, okay, done. Like, that's the shit.
I am a Kristen, you know, type.
Yeah. And I admire people. I don't ever want to criticize because I admire that ability to do that because I can't. And so when I decided to put aside money and I was going to upgrade my record player, and I was doing a little bit of research on different record players and different amplifiers and this and other thing, I settled on this Canadian company. It's Fluence. And it's sort of like, and I was telling Kristen, I said, yeah, I'm going to get the Fluence. I'm going to get the RT85 with the Thailand's head and the whole bit. And she goes, are you saying that right? Because like she doesn't know the word, she doesn't know what record player, but just like saying it Fluence, she's like, you must be pronouncing that wrong. That can't possibly be how that's supposed to be said.
You never heard of Fluence where they wear no pants?
Like, that's when you're having a seance, but your medium is sick.
There was another one that came up, I won't remember it tonight, but there was another one that came up like that recently where it was some word and you're just sort of like, somebody missed a meeting and they just put the pronunciation out of the universe and the universe went, I guess that's what we're doing. And then like everybody else came back from their weekend golf trip and they're like, why are people pronouncing the word that way? Didn't we tell you we're supposed to be this way? Like, oh, darn, sorry. Whoops.
Yeah, the guy that invented the animated GIF says hi.
It's pronounced heef.
Heef. So yeah, with all that, I would say I'll be there with that. Like, it, you know, the big swings are so interesting. The lead characters, the lead actors are really good, and they do some different things with what could have been a pretty pedestrian police chaser type of a thing, and they just didn't do that. And I think that's interesting in so many respects. It's like, yeah, down with that whole thing. So yeah, so I'll say 8 out of 10. If you do end up making a third one though, it has got to be a jet setting slasher thing through Southeast Asia and to like the Mediterranean, and just like take every slasher nonsense crazy thing, mix in some of the, you know, the Fugitive, and just sort of just make it a go, and like, you know, that's the movie I want. But as it stands, yeah, I'd say there's just a lot of good creative juice going on with this. So I'd say 8 out of 10. Well, it doesn't even work anymore. You can't say your passport stamped in blood because they don't stamp your passport anymore. So it's not a thing you do anymore.
What do they do?
They just scan it in the thing.
That sucks.
Digital doohickey. Yeah, last when I was in the UK in August, like, I didn't even interact with a person the whole way through. Like, you walk over this little machine, it scans the thing, you look at the thing, walk through this hallway, and this scanning hallway thing, like, from Total Fucking Recall, and then you walk through and they're like, yeah, you're good. Like, shit, all right.
You're good, except your underwear are a size too small, and that's going to give you ringing in your ears.
It's like, I see that you're wearing underpants that you've worn for 2 days in a row. I see you. Like, go, leave me alone.
That's only if you are booked to see both London and France. Look at your underpants.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh,
I see you have a connecting flight. Let me tell you something.
You also have a small polyp on your colon. Yeah. All right, so let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about two 80s movies that some of us liked in different ways than others.
Yes, that's true.
Back in a moment. Back in a few. Up next, I'm going to be presumptuous and I'm going to say let's put Necropolis up next.
That's fair.
Necropolis is the touching tale of a witch from the 1700s where everyone had hairstyles of the 1980s. Who is reborn in the 1980s and goes about trying to start a cult and summon the devil and, you know, all the things that a young career woman does. There is a point in this movie where she grows 6 boobs so that she can breastfeed her cult.
Yep.
And besides that moment, I have just no use for the rest of this. It is I know that part of it is just the way that it's not been preserved. And I think I've just gotten spoiled watching like the Friday the 13th of the 80s, where like those are pristinely preserved and beautiful to look at. Even like the cinematography on the Friday the 13th series, pretty good. And this just looks like dog shit, and it really took me out of it. I was like, oh, it's got that like video kind of filmed on VHS look to it, and the motion of everyone, and then people started talking. I was like, oh, this is acted like it was shot on VHS.
Oh. Yeah, that is definitely a thing in this
one. I just could not even get a layer into this, and so anyone who liked it, please step forward and tell people why, because it wasn't for me.
I mean, I liked it. This is what Josh and I talked a little bit before recording about how like Necropolis and I, Madman are slivers of like if you know the pie that is horror movies from the 80s that are kind of schlocky, and they're slices from right near each other. They're kissing cousins, and yet I like one and not the other, and so does he. And it dun dun dun, it's not the same ones. So it's part of that is what like the baffling thing is to try to figure out is like, why is that? If they are both kind of low budget, you know, high effort, maybe, or maybe not even, you know, like, why does this one click with me? And I don't exactly know. I think the sort of the non-actor part, as much as that kind of sucks, also means that when the plot doesn't make sense, I go, well, sure. Cause it just kind of feels like they're making it all up as they go anyway. Cause there's not a ton of sense in here. Like, I don't know what part of being like a awesome, all powerful satanic witch from the past in the future where the past has occurred means you have to do like weird 80s aerobic dancing, but I'm glad we get like three scenes of it, cause it's fucking ridiculous and awesome. You know, just like having someone have like six tits, like a dog, you're like, okay, that's fucking insane and kind of awesome. And like, you know, when they shoot the there's a subplot here where like she's manipulating all the people that a priest slash social worker type guy is trying to help. And like one of his folks that he's, you know, been doing really well for a while, like comes in his office and shoots him. And like, there's a fair amount of like paper and shit that comes out of the bullet hole that forms on his arm when like the squib goes off. Like, and there's not, you know, I'm guessing they had one chance at that and just like, that's the cut. And so like all those little things are like really endearing to me in this particular movie in a way that I'd fully understand that other people might just, yeah, be turned off completely because it's not technically working. But there's enough just like brashness to the like hubris of slapping all this together and putting it on film and being like, that's a movie, right? So I don't know.
Like a Mystery Science Theater style, like the movies you see on MST3K.
Yeah.
This one is just missing chunks of story and scene, mm-hmm. where they're just like, we'll just cut to the next thing and then you'll just understand after a while that this guy has gone to the police and this guy is over here. And it's like the complete opposite of a film like Angst, where it's like, if this guy is going to get out of his car and walk to his bedroom, you are going to see every goddamn step he takes because otherwise you won't believe that he did it. And meanwhile, yeah, this how movie would you is know? Like, she's getting pulled over by the cops and then we blink and she's like at the police station across town wrapping up a conversation with a guy. Like, shit. Yep. Okay. That's where we're at. This is the thing about a movie like this where you and I can say all of the same things and yes. then go, and it's great and it's terrible. Huh. And then we just kind of have to eye each other like the.
Yeah. Like,
what is it? Family well, Guy or something? Yeah.
Well, I can't, you know, and I'm certainly not going to be like Mr. I'm the guy, whatever, but like, there's definitely a stretch of 70s and 80s things where like I can find the joy. And I think a normal person just sort of goes like, nah, there's no joy to be had there. And it's sort of like, and I guess it's all in how you, you know, how you kind of hang with it. Like, and I think of a bunch of ones, like if you go the sleazier, the much sleazier scuzzier route, it's like the, it's Basket Case and The Witch That Came From the Sea and those kind of ones. And it's just, you can smell the film stock, you know, it's just that kind of feel things. And then you go like the other direction where you get things that are slick and interesting and have like a good pulse to them. And there are, there's a lot going on there. Same thing like with Giallo ones where, like, you know, for every one, like really cool, interesting, engaging one, you just have another one that just has a lot of flouncing and people being stabbed, wearing leather gloves and just like a lot of dramatic nonsense. And it's just like, I don't, okay, whatever. So it's just kind of like, it's just, but if it, there's ones like that that fall in that category where I've certainly had people I've known or talked to or interacted with that really were just all about them. They're like, oh, this is the best thing. And like, well, okay. And so it's sort of like, you know, it definitely is anywhere from mid 70s to all the way through the 80s. Like, it's such a spectrum of that kind of thing where one person's, yeah, that was fun. And another person's like, oh my God, that was interminable. And this one definitely like pushes you a little bit, I think. Cause like, you know, there's like the one guy who's like, he's like, he's, he got to talk it like a Bubba the Guy.
Two people talk like a Bubba the Guy. Like, hey, what are you doing?
It's just like, okay. And then you have like all the, then you have the police detective guy who I don't think passed third grade. I'm relatively sure. And it's sort of like, it's, but he's like this integral part of the thing along with like the British journalist lady for some fucking reason or other. And it's sort of like, so all of that stuff, none of that makes a lick of sense. And so you have this range of people who just were like, oh, maybe I'll try acting this weekend. And then
the thing is, you're kind of right. Like, I really liked the cop guy. I thought he was kind of hilarious. And so I was like, what else has he been in? He looks even kind of familiar. He's in a movie called Panama Red in 1976. He's in Necropolis in 1986. Those are his entire credits. This guy did just act for a weekend a couple times. Like, it is insane. And like, to me, that kind of made it more fun. But if it's not working for you, that makes it like, ah, see, they didn't even have a real actor. Like,
if it were the more Ace fun for and to against watch,
is the yeah. same evidence. Yeah.
It's just, it was to me just very slow in its pacing and not very stingy with its weird things. Like, it didn't dole them out as frequently as I wanted. And then when we got Mad Men, like, that has so much more production value to it that it was a lot easier to get into what I thought was ultimately like pretty clever script, but you know, we'll get into that too.
Well, and another thing too with the Necropolis is our lead lady, which is what the hell's her name, the actress who plays her, I can't think of her name. She's very like
Leanne Baker.
For a 16 like goes to the biker chick kind of villain, she's very passive. And like, and that's, and so that's another thing with, in terms of like parts of the plot or whatever else, like her powers are such that like, you know, like I will talk you into a thing just by like being passive aggressive sort of. And it's sort of like, I'm going to mess with your brain with the power of being passive aggressive. I'm like, well, all right. But then there's like this, like she does a lot of stabbing and a lot of like attacking and things. And then a lot of soul sucking with the little ring. And then when the thing, when it starts getting the goo, I couldn't help but think of the SNL commercial for Crystal Gravy.
I love that one.
Like, it was she sucking the alien spit out of him.
Yeah, right.
Like the alien rule.
So you have this like level of like bombastic absurdity mixed with this sort of like this kind of like, yeah, we're gonna, it's the Satan thing, and guess what you're gonna do? And you're like, I don't know if Satan, but I don't know if you could have like a Grace Jones level of like just scene destroyer in that role or whatever else, and then it just becomes a whole different kind of whatever. Like, okay, well,
yeah. Her eyeshadow does a lot of the acting.
So, you know, it's just like I said, it's just a fascinating thing, and you can see the ambition. I don't know that, and I guess I'll say the main thing, which is I don't know if there was like the creative juice and talent as much as there was like the ambition to do a thing. I can definitely see the ambition of it.
I think so too.
You know, but it just, much like the one, fuck a duck, the one about the I think it's called The Lamp. You remember that one? It was like, it was one of those ones that popped up in one of those truck stop collections that I found.
Oh, jeez.
And then I think Shudder ended up putting it out a couple of years, putting it on Shudder a couple of years ago. And it's like the people that like discovered the sort of the wishing lamp and then like unleashes the thing and then all that business. Like you could see the movie that they saw in their heads. They're like, yeah, this is what we're going to make. And it's like, but then you get the thing that actually occurs and it's like, well, it's not the room. It's not like the room level, but it's sort of like it's you can see the thing they want to make, and it's sort of like, but it's not necessarily that.
This has like a Deathstalker kind of feel to me, which is that like this kind of movie is popular right now. Like we could make a horror picture. We could just have all you got to have is like girl with her tits out and then some stuff about Satan. We can make a horror picture. Why not? I bet we could sell it to, 25 theaters for, charge people two bits a gander or whatever it was.
Yeah, it does have a feel of like a movie and plot that's worked out with like four dudes holding like glasses of brandy and cigars that all own like car dealerships. And they're like, see, that's perfect. And like, I got a cousin who strips. She can be the main girl. And then they're like, cool, we all kick in $40,000 and we have this thing done by Wednesday. And
it'll be great. It'll be Manos Hands of Fate is what we'll call it.
Yeah, and like that's the thing is sometimes you get those and sometimes you get something that's kind of fun and then you get the occasional like weird classic. But yeah, for me on that spectrum, this falls on like kind of fun and just, weird,
Congratulations.
I did it.
Yeah, you did a better job at this movie than I did.
This time I win.
Fred did something, it said something about next time recently, and I went, I'll get you next time, Gadget. Next time. And of course, she had no frame of reference, so I was just being terrifying. Yeah.
No, it's good. It's good. They should have random fear. Sun Tzu taught us that.
I was like, honey, I'm sorry. It's this cartoon about a robot policeman. Well, he's not a robot. He's actually a cyborg, and he had. Never mind. It's fine. Bad guy with weird voice. So yeah, I wouldn't say anybody needs to rush out to see it, and I also wouldn't say that anybody who likes it is wrong, because you can't be wrong about liking a thing. So for me, it's like a 4. It exists. I would love to see if just a clean print of it would change my perception a little bit, because that's where I started to fall off of it, but. Yeah.
That's presupposing 10, one exists. Yeah.
4 out of 10 witches on motorcycles.
Nice. I like this a lot more. So it's one of those ones where like I'd love to give it a very generous score for like how much fun I had. But like, yeah, it's not a good movie. And again, this is where ratings are silly. So like to split the difference between like the quality of the movie and like how much fun I had, I guess that would mean like splitting the difference, that's like a 6. So 6 out of 10 witch boobs.
those
boobs.
Yeah, okay, good. We all went there.
Just leaping on the grenade today.
Yum, yum, yum. This low-hanging fruit is delicious.
Yeah, I mean, this one, it's slight, it's slight, but it's not, the one thing I will give this one for sure is that there are definitely ones that delve in, or not delve into, drift into the kind of sleaze territory that are just sticky and unpleasant. And this isn't that.
This goes more silly, I think.
Yeah, it goes a little goofier, like feels a little bit more like kind of like Swords and Wizards-y. Deathstalker is like not a bad reference point. It's sort of like, it's more, it feels like it's more in that realm, but then it feels like there's stretches of this where they think they're making something more serious than they're making, and so that kind of keeps it a little off kilter, but it goes along with it, interesting enough to kind of get along through. Like I'm kind of more with Josh. I enjoyed I Madman quite a bit more, but as it stands, like this was just sort of like, wasn't this an odd thing? Like, and then this gets the end of it, and you're sort of like, again, British chicks got the ring, and all right, man, cool. And that was fun and silly. So yeah, it's just kind of like water off a duck's back kind of a situation. Like, I had a lot of fun with parts of it, and then it's kind of like just drifted on through. And thank you for not being so darn sticky and sleazy that I have to get an STD test for my television. I think I'll say six, just because like I enjoyed more of it than I didn't enjoy parts of it, and I really enjoyed the mechanism of fighting back against her mind control by being like somebody else being like, just don't like do it though, like don't. Like don't listen to her. and it works. And he's pointing a gun at his head, and he's like, don't listen to her, don't do it. And he's like, well, okay, just delightful. So yeah, so I'll say 6 out of 10. 6 out of 10. Do you have a bra in the size 34D, 34D, and 34DD, 34C? Is it like a strapless one? It couldn't possibly be a strapless one.
Well, yeah, because you need the nursing bra with the cups that can, yeah, you can detach, right?
Oh, that reminds me, if you want to see an even more bizarre witch breastfeeding scene, I did foolishly watch the Full Moon unofficial sequel to this that's called Necropolis Legion, I think.
Yeah, I was looking at that now, going, I wonder if those two things are related.
They are. Boy, I am over it with Full Moon. It's a 62-minute movie, including 4 minutes of credits. And the witch in that one does not have six boobs, but she does have boobs which have mouths with sharp teeth on them.
Neat.
And so she uses those to bite someone to death. And then her two witch sidekicks then come over and milk starts pouring out of the mouths on her breasts. And they start like trying to chug that at an awkward angle. So like, if you can find that clip on YouTube, that's hilarious. And then the rest of it will make you want that hour back. So and I saved you some time.
Stars Augie Duke from Moon Garden.
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy. But that thing came out in 2019. The
Moon Garden
official sequel. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yep.
So somebody was like, you know what? It's due for a comeback. Necropolis. It's going to be huge.
I'm sure they got the rights cheap.
We got some IP. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's talk about I Madman or Yo El Loco. By the way,
one more time.
I missed that Necropolis was La Ciudad de los Muertos, of course, but I'm Madman. Yo, El Loco.
That's so good. Oh, had I mentioned to you guys my crew I work with that pretty much still only speaks Spanish? Miriam's getting better at her English, but every now and then, like a phrase that one of us thinks is funny and the other one's language catches on. So for about a week now, whenever someone does something or drops something or whatever, they are papas locos. And so just like all of a sudden we'll have a big rush of people and Miriam just looking at me like, Senor Matt, papas locos customers. Like, yes, our customers are crazy potatoes. It just makes us laugh every time. So enjoy that if you like your weird Spanish things.
I like Spanish things, and I like that story. That's adorable.
Papas locos.
I mean, if you're gonna have like papas fritas, you could have papas locos. Sure.
Yeah, it worked for El Pollo Loco. Style.
Why not? I'm Madman is a movie about a woman who is reading a horror novel that mysteriously turns up on her doorstep in the days before Amazon, when you had to go to a place and find a book.
Gross.
And as she reads it, she finds that things that she's reading about are taking place. Only the characters in the book are replaced with the characters in her life. And reality is blurring. And there's a guy with ugly makeup who has a stop motion animated mini-me. And this is a fun little thing that's just full of ideas that are working harder than they need to. And I think the... one of the main examples of that for me is the piano playing guy. Because they've got a piano shop that is within earshot of this lady's apartment if both that window and her window are open. And every night, you know, either the night watchman or the person who owns the place comes and plays the piano. So you get scenes that just start with this lovely classical piano music, and then it just kind of wafts into the scene and then plays on the background of the scene. It's like, that is way more than you needed to give us for that character or for this movie. But you did. And like, I found this a very generous, this movie is a generous lover.
Well, yeah, there's a creative energy to this that just sort of was like it's just will not be denied. It just sort of like it just keeps giving you things, just like the brassy lady at the bookstore, and like you just get one damn thing after another.
Yeah, but like the Rita really, Wilson at the bookstore. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like okay, fantastic, and it's like, and then the whole logic of her working there, doing the thing, like, what universe is this that any of this works for any of these people? But it does, apparently, and it's like, all right, cool. But what I really love, like, what I think is important to mention, is the guy who directed this is the guy who directed The Gate.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Thus the stop motion. Yeah.
And also a couple episodes of Red Shoe Diaries.
Tibor.
And he's done, and he's done a bunch of Hallmark movies. He did Ice Spiders. He did some episodes of the Outer Limits series from the mid-90s. And like, it's just a fascinating filmography.
Yeah.
Anybody who does anything that's crazy, weird, and then also does Hallmark movies, I'm always just like amazed by that, because I am one of the people that do not look down on Hallmark movies. There's quite a few of them that I really enjoy. Sincerely, yeah. I do like them.
Plus, and people need a paycheck.
Yeah, every time I watch a Hallmark movie, my argument is always like, I see a bunch of people that got paid, yep, and that's really cool. But like, to have something like this, which is like The Gate, and this movie also did like Here Comes Christmas Time or whatever, and just like some just saccharine and sweet sort of thing. I'm like, what a fascinating deal. But this is like, you remember was it the one we watched with the one recently where the lady who wants to go to the 5-person art school.
This kind of gave me similar vibes to that as far as like era and feel.
But like the whole vibe of like the art, the kind of noir pulp art horror thing.
Yeah.
And like how that aesthetic works its way in, and like the creature kind of like takes over and is going to be like in reality and stuff, like that is a wildly creative and fun idea. Mm-hmm. it's like and she keeps trying to tell the cops like, no, it's this guy, and they're like, sure, there's this guy, and they're all connected, these things, and it's just like, she's like, but it is.
You have observed this happening.
It's just like, oh my god. And then by the third act, boy howdy does he just lean into just like, we are going to go nuts, and we're going to introduce all these other aspects, and this like shovel-faced, like sad-eyed derp monster thing. You have all that other stuff going on, and it's just like, wow, what a third act is! Like, just like sit back and just let it happen. It's just like, ah, it's fun, just so much fun. We're gonna
throw an Island of Dr. Moreau / Frankenstein scenario in this, like, what seems like it's going to be mostly a kind of sweet romantic drama between her and her boyfriend. And like, even though she reads the pulp novels and gets scared, and he has to comfort her, and they joke about it, but he thinks it's adorable and she's loves that she has him, blah, blah. Like, their relationship is really cute. And I could see a version of this where everything that happens is just in the reading of the book, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they just finally, you know, she quits reading and then they have sex. That's it. You know, that would work too. But once the murderer actually is real, then you have a kind of changing dynamic between everybody. I really like the way that they transfer you between the book reality and the mm-hmm. movie reality. There are some of those shots that I just love where she's in a house robe and she's putting her drink on the counter, and you follow the drink to the counter, and then her hand picks it back up, and now it's a martini, and now she's in a cocktail dress, and the whole house is decorated differently. And like, no time has passed. She just has slipped into that scene, and stuff like that is just catnip, and they do that several times.
Yeah, no, it has craft ambition out the wazoo. It's just sort of like, and just watching the monster gather parts, and just sort of like, one of the ones that just, I made myself laugh, But like when he gets the lips from the lady, and you see her body on the ground with like the jagged mess around her face, where else? And they're like, "Well, he didn't cut on the lines. Like, that's gonna be so much harder." It's so stupid. Like, shut up, brain. Like, that's not even the thing. Quiet you. And it's like, but that's something like this that feels like it's got the fun to it. And it's sort of like, it's no better or worse than anything else, but it just has that spark of something that sort of like just makes it clip along. And the creature is fascinating, and the lady is sympathetic and interesting, and the romantic components of it are not just sort of so bland that sort of like they're interesting. It's like the dynamic with the detective and the rest of the police is fascinating in and of itself. Like that whole, every bit of mechanism when it comes to like how the cops are investigating things. It was like, that's just cinema by itself. Every time he comes in, like, what are you working on? Like, stop working on that, but I'm going to keep working on that. I should, well, but you, and it's just like, just fascinating. Like, we got to put some cop shit in there. Like, yeah, okay. How do cops behave? Like, I don't know.
I can never see one in my life.
It's like, I know I keep going back to SNL here, but it reminds me of one of my favorite sketches of the last probably 10, 15 years was Amy Adams hosting the Christmas episode where it's the three lounge singers and they're singing about things that have become progressively weirder. And then it comes to pass that they are three raccoons that were granted a wish. What they were wished for was to be singers in a lounge. And then they're like, and they, cause like the lyrics get, you know, like, and then the man in the red coat and then it shoots down the fire tube. Shoots to the fire tube, and it's sort of like, and then like all their purses are just filled with like garbage. And it's just like, there's a glee to these things that it's hard to exactly capture, hard to articulate, but you just kind of know when you see it, and there's like, there's some glee to be had with the way that this comes together. Like I said, it's just like having no concept whatsoever about the police component of this, but just like it's a big part of it. And it's sort of like every time one of these fuckers enters or exits like a murder scene, it just cracks me up. They just come wandering in. They're like, I guess we can leave it till later. I don't know. Are we supposed to like tape this off or something? We should just let a civilian in there though. It's just so goofy. And I couldn't even be mad about it. Like, yeah, whatever. I guess it's like, you just gotta roll with it. It's fine. It's like, so I don't know. I had the fun with this. I enjoyed this quite a bit.
Yeah, any movie that makes Charlie not worry about the cop stuff.
I know, right?
That's a special like, movie.
Yeah.
This is I think it's just much more movie shaped than the other one. And that made it easier for me to succumb to its charms. And then just Piano Man. Like, he's, you know, Billy Joel ain't got shit on that guy.
Yeah, and maybe that's part of why this one didn't work as well for me, is that, like, I kind of figured out pretty early on that, like, with Necropolis, part of the fun was having, like, literally no idea where it was going. And this one, because it is a little bit more of a movie, it was, like, maybe that just made it a little too slight for me, because this is one that I can barely even remember, and I, like, just saw it, because I just kind of, like, skipped along. And I was amused by the, like, got your nose type aspect of the dude kind of reassembling his face. Like, there are parts of this that I like you kind of touched on that, like the scene transitions and things, you know, like it's one of those ones where, you know, like the worst possible thing, like I'm not mad at it. I just kind of was, eh. So just something about this didn't spark that same joy. And it's that weird intangible it factor, I guess.
I can see if it feels like it's too good to be a bad movie and not good enough to be like a great movie,
you know, but like that would imply that it's like shitty, and it's just not. It just wasn't good enough to like capture my attention, you know.
I think the like just the stop motion homunculus alone was worth my price of admission. He was very neat, and those scene transitions, and then just the plenty of like weird goopy prosthetic things going on all made me happy. I didn't quite understand whether he was like a supernatural entity, because he does kind of come and go like a karma chameleon and less like a person. But I don't know. I was thoroughly entertained throughout, I guess.
Unless he's chasing around the stacks of the bookstore, which is just comical. like kind of like, oh, is it? Oh, huh? And that whole thing would, he just kind of goes a little boop, and then, running.
A little Scooby-Doo chase?
Yeah, Scooby-Doo, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, absolutely. It was just like, it's like this guy in the full costume is doing a lot of like, oh. Just like.
Where'd you go? Yeah.
Oh, also, did you guys not think of when she goes, she's running away from him and runs up that stack of stairs that have got all the books on them, where you know, she's stumbling to get up there, stumbling, and then he just comes walking up, like all slow, and it's like, did you guys not think they must have had to take that a couple of times because he must have slept on a book?
Like, yeah, he can barely see, so
yeah,
he's gonna just do the lumbering thing.
It had to have happened at least once, but he's like, that shit. I'm like, all right, let's take it again.
It's like the ironic thing is he slipped on a copy of The Fall of the Roman Empire. Like, shit. And then the next take, he slips again. Like, what was that one? Legends of the Fall. Like, okay, guys, we please get all of the ironically titled books off the set? Like, get rid of Farewell to Arms. We are not insured for that shit. Gotta keep both his friggin' arms. I felt like I would have more to say about this than I did, but I think
I felt the same about Necropolis, but it's just they are slight regardless of whether you like
would,
it or not.
I would love to see though, I just want more people to see this one. I would really love to see it get out of MGM Plus is the only place that you can have it.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
And it's not even you can't even
this is a good Tubi movie
from Prime. Yeah, it should be on Tubi. It should be at least like the $3 rental thing. Like, that would be fine. Or Shudder should pick this up. Like, it's weird to encounter something that an old movie that you have to start a new subscription to get, especially when it's MGM. What the fuck is MGM Plus? They don't even have Wizard of Oz on there. What the fuck? Anyway, be that as it may, I do think that this just has a fun zippiness to it. And so it's not the Citizen Kane of movies, but it was enough to get me up to like a 8 out of 10.
Holy cow.
Yeah. What?
No, I was just surprised. That was very high. Good.
I really like it. It's a 8 out of 10. Lend us an ear. You're the piano man.
Nice. Hans
Roman. Piano Man.
I didn't like this that much. It's like I said, not mad at it. It's just, you know, that's the weird thing with the kind of that's the reason that I don't often just excuse me. The reason I don't often just like dive headfirst into like the Tubi free on Amazon horror stuff is that like you're gonna have a lot of chaff among the wheat. And this would be one of the ones that I might watch 30 minutes of and give up on if I wasn't doing it for the show. So like, glad I saw it, but like a 4 for me, because they're doing a lot of things well. It just kind of doesn't work for me. So yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of more towards Josh's area. I really had fun with this. I think it had a good spark and a good kind of clip along. There's some nonsensical, silly business for sure, but it's just, I enjoyed the kind of the clip of it. It felt kind of adventure-y in a way. And I would say the biggest thing above everything else is that I think it has some style to it. I think it has like a feel and a look to it, which I really dug. And, you know, sure, some of the things don't make a whole hell of a lot of sense, but it just kind of like just kind of go along with it, with this sort of interesting sort of character, which I mean, especially given that of the time period that it was, it's like she's not only defined by the fact that now she has the man. Like, she's interesting just in and of herself, but she does have to do most of the heavy lifting before like anybody actually listens to her because she's a lady. So it's sort of like, yeah, that in and of itself is like that's pretty cool. So yeah, I think I had a lot of style, I had a lot of interesting things going on. I had a lot of fun with it. I like the creature. I love the big shovel faced dirt biting monster at the end. Like, it was great. So yeah, I had a lot of fun with this. And yeah, I'm with Josh. I kind of wish more people got a chance to see this damn thing, because it's just right up there with all those ones that you just discover. You're like how is this a thing?
Also deserve mad credit for the phrase I loved so much of madness, more of sin. That shit's rules. That's like awesome. Put that on your posters, everyone. That's great.
Is that a Poe quote?
I don't know. I was. It sounded like.
And more yeah, or like an horror, the soul of the plot.
What?
I don't know where it comes from. Mask of the Math of the Red Desk, maybe.
Oh, that could be. Or it sounds like the kind of thing that would have been like the tagline on a Hammer.
Oh, the Conqueror
picture.
Worm.
Oh, okay. Oh. There you go.
Yeah, I forgot about the Conqueror Worm. Oh, that's the fuck.
Never forget about the Conqueror Worm.
Okay, well, I promise I won't read this for the rest of the podcast, but
no promises after that. What?
Let's, I think we got a score from Charlie Kiss.
Oh, I'm sorry. Seven and a half out of 10. 7.5 out of 10. The same filing, the same stair filing system that one of the record stores that I worked at in college had. Because he had stairs that led up to this loft area that nobody would go up into, but the stairs were used as like a filing cabinet, basically. Yeah. And there's just tons of shit stacked on every stair. And so it's like, when this popped up in this one, and it was just sort of like, I was like, yeah, see, that's why you don't go up those stairs, because if you walk up them, you cause a big mess. So they're just, they are a filing cabinet. In this case, a bookshelf.
Got it.
Out of 10.
Out of 10, indeed. And we'll take a quick break, and then we'll talk about the rest of our movies lives for the next time we do stuff. So next week, I have finally started catching up on the Friday the 13th movies, which were like the biggest hole in my horror lexicon. I just never watched them when they came out beyond the first one. So have been having all these like fascinating experiences with these movies and finding that they're a lot more interesting than I thought they would be. And we figured, even though we have technically already done them, that was a week that I was out and Charlie wasn't on the show yet. So I think we feel justified in taking another run through the Friday the 13th series. And if nothing else, we can compare how Matt feels about them now versus 10 fucking years ago.
Yeah, Jesus. Anyway,
so we are going to watch the first three Fridays the 13th. Otherwise known as the one where it's his mom, the one where he's pretty much Jason, and the one that's a super goofy 3D thing.
Yeah.
And that'll be fun. So Friday the 13th, 1 through 3, they are some fuck-ass rental through Fandango at the moment, if you don't have the
14, really?
Have them on solid media. But yeah, they're, you can rent them on Fandango or like, but Fucklier, you know, one of those guys. Yeah.
Yar.
MGM Plus. Anyway, you'll find me. And I have been Josh this entire time, and I'll say goodnight.
Hey, we'll have a short next episode. Having learned from history that if you try to theme the shorts with the movies, it always ends up being a bad short film. So I didn't. We're just going to watch shorts I picked. I'm excited to show you guys this one. It's called Playing God, and it is stop motion, which is always one of my favorites. So enjoy that. That will be on horrorshowhotdog.com if you want to find it there. I believe that was, yes, that was YouTube. You can find it there as well. Playing God, stop motion short. And you know what, real quick, I should mention, we got notified from the folks at Twin Cities Gay Scene that one of the short films we showed at the Minnesota Genre Film Exposition called Or Not won a film award for 2025 from Twin Cities Gay Scene for Best Newcomer. So congratulations, Or Not, and everyone involved for the win there. And thanks again for letting us show your amazing short film at our festival. So congrats. And with all that being said, as far as you all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
Ooh, and also congratulations to Patrick Ray and the crew on Super Happy Fun Clown, which just got picked up for streaming on a service called Bloodstream.
Oh, hell yeah. Cool. Good for them.
Well, that's, oh, good for him. Yeah.
That's like, awesome.
Good people.
Yeah, they were really cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, This is all very good. Yeah, this is Charlie Dunn and Austin. Yeah, take care of yourselves, take care of each other. Yeah, the holiday stretch is always kind of crazy for different people in different ways. And, like, you know, for some people it's great fun, some people it's great stress, some people it's great no fun at all. So it's always a spectrum of it. But the biggest thing you can do above all the rest of it is just, you know, find something that sparks a little joy in for you, whether it's finding old micro machines or muscles figures on eBay, or if it's watching Hallmark movies or watching horror movies or
watching Gremlins.
And if you watch Gremlins, and if you're around little children or you have little children or anything like that, like, I saw this meme pop up recently, like, to all the parents having to go to all the grade school children's recitals and showing all the Gremlins, like, singing carols. And then there was a sing-along thing at Joe's school, and I was like, I just to not laugh. I was the whole fucking time. So I'm just picturing Gremlins. No, but yeah. So just take care of yourself. Take care of yourself, and then that'll radiate to those around you. And otherwise, yeah, be good. And then we'll talk towards you here real soon. But thank you very much for listening, and take care, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Larry dies, and so they bring his two best friends in to identify the body. And they go, okay, well, we can't quite tell, but can you flip him over? And the coroner's like, why do I need to flip him over for you to identify the body? And he said, well, he was your best friend. You saw him every day. Why can't you identify him by his face? Like, well, we just got to be sure. You got to flip him over. So they flip him over. And could you spread his butt cheeks? Like, no, why do we have to spread? And so one of them reaches over and pulls him apart and goes, no, man, that ain't Larry. Like, well, why do you say that? Well, funny thing that not very many people know is that Larry had two anuses. I said, really? Yeah, whenever we went out with him, people would say, here comes Larry with the two assholes.
Oh, God. God damn it.
Oh, that's terrific.
God damn it.